How goes the ongoing saga of trying to get your kitchen set up? I saw electrical guys out there the other day, so we're making progress at least.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe by the end of the year. I felt like I'm 2 weeks away from it having it done all year.
Yeah. Every week we talk about it. You're 2 weeks away.
This is crazy. We're going to have a special episode just to celebrate it.
Probably.
I'm going to have to bring in like a big platter of food that we made. We're going to have every kind of tater tot and french fries and onion rings and pizza and whatever else we can make.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
But I'm on a diet. I'm trying to lose weight. So maybe not too much fried shit.
We'll bring you some diet stuff.
I love it.
Lettuce wraps.
All right. Yeah, there we go.
I'm Scott Hess, tax and business consultant.
I'm John Barton, small business owner. Remember the tortoise and the hare? Slow and steady wins the race.
We started Turtlesmith to help people start small businesses, providing information and resources to small business owners and entrepreneurs.
Build a solid foundation and forge your dreams.
Well, this week we're talking a little bit about managing seasonal help, which can be a real struggle for a lot of small businesses, particularly as we're kind of moving into the holiday season now. You got to get a lot of extra bodies in for retail shopping, longer hours, more inventory to manage. But even if you're not a holiday company or a small retail business, you know, there's lots of businesses that have peak seasons that need seasonal help.
Yeah. Like I said before, my business has never really needed that, but I will say that, you know, one business that I worked in, when Christmas time came around, we all just put in extra hours.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll happen. Yeah. It happens to me during tax season. I've been known to work, you know, 100-hour weeks and just sleep here sometimes, but hopefully this year we have enough, extra people to be helping out. I'm going to even have to rope Dylan, our marketing person, into doing some financials for me. So,
yeah, well, I you know, understand that. I think last year, didn't we try to get my kids to do something and then they just never showed up?
I did try. Yeah. They decided they didn't want to come. But you and I just invested actually in a company that has to deal with a lot of seasonal work. Our backyard company, Rhino Backyards.
That is right, yeah.
You know, we just entered our slow season. So we've let go a lot of employees that, you know, will probably hopefully come back in March, or we'll have to rehire some people. We did keep some of our key managers, but a lot of the kind of laborers that help, you know, build the pools, there's no work for me.
I don't even know how I could like deal with a business like that. So.
Well, we are dealing with one.
Well, I know we are dealing with it, but I'm like a little bit removed from it, of course, you know, but like I had a contract one time to do some prototypes for another company.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal was that I would hire people to build these prototypes, and then afterwards they would also build the cases for this company, or they would build not build a case, but build more prototypes. So basically we would have an ongoing prototype operation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we built, I think, 18 new prototypes for this company. Then when they were done, the owner of the company says to me, he says, well, I don't need any more prototypes for a while. You know, I guess he didn't expect so many, but he goes, I don't need any more for a while. And I said, well, what about the people that you had me hire that you promised that you would pay for, you know, ongoing? And he said, just fire them. And I was like, that's not what I do. You know,
right.
I spent the first month I spent just teaching them what to do. I mean, these people are well trained now to make great pool cue cases.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to just let them go. So that was actually the start of what became our bread and butter model. You know, the seed, I guess, that grew into where we are now. So it was fortunate that happened. But had I had the same mindset as him, you know, of just tossing people aside, you know, when they're not needed, then we wouldn't be sitting here talking today.
Well, that's also maybe a little bit different, though. When you hire somebody for a seasonal job, they know it's a seasonal job ahead of time. They're expecting it. That's a little shady. Just hiring people, getting them all trained up with a promise of ongoing work and then getting rid of them. I probably would have tried to do the same thing, try to keep them employed somehow.
Now, I do know people who go around and look for seasonal jobs. There are people who follow, they go work in pool places. Like when I say pool, they go work in swimming pool places, mm-hmm, in summer. They will work in pool rooms in winter. Mm-hmm. You know, when more people are playing pool, they can make more money.
Yeah.
Pool rooms are generally deader in summer.
Yeah, that's very common.
I know people who make it a habit to go work for Amazon and places like that in the and they will literally take 2 or 3 months off. They'll work their ass off for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll take time off.
Yeah, I had some friends that worked as ski instructors at the mm-hmm. resorts. They'd work all winter. And then during the summer, they would work as a lifeguard. Or sometimes they work for like the forestry service for summer stuff. My brother was kind of a migratory worker for a little while. He would follow the seasons of harvest for wine. So he'd jump hemispheres. He'd work in Napa during the spring or the fall. And then in the next season, he would go down to Australia, New Zealand, and work
there.
That
sounds so cool.
Go to Europe the next year, and then back down to Australia, New Zealand, South America. So he was jumping around.
Now that I think about it, I guess in a sense, I was a seasonal worker when I was a high diver because we did shows.
Yeah.
And so spring and summer were the times when most of the shows were happening.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did do one time, I think in February in Paris, and that was a pretty awful experience.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Well, we've kind of broken this down on how to handle seasonal employees in a couple different phases. And so the first phase is planning and preparation. So you have to do your forecasting and budgeting first. So we talked a little bit last week, I think, about 13-week cash flow forecast. This would be more of a sales forecast, which we do have some more information on that in our Turtlesmith Cup first season and in our courses coming up. But doing a sales forecast, you want to kind of review as much historical data as you can get to kind of see where your sales are, when the big times are, when the booms happen. And so you need to know when you need more bodies in the store. Usually the week of Thanksgiving through kind of Christmas time for most retail shops.
When do you start looking for them though?
Well, so that's a great question. And in our phase one, the planning and preparation, we want to try to look at those people about 90 to 60 days before the beginning of that rush season. So if you are a retail shop, you want to be looking for people in September, kind of starting this plan and preparation phase. If you're like our backyard company or a landscaping company, you want to be looking for people in February, March, kind of starting that. For tax season, we usually start this preparation phase right around late October, early November. So about 90 to 60 days before you really want to hire somebody. Forecasting and budgeting is the first plan. That way you know when you need people in and when you start this phase one.
So basically don't do it like me, like the day of the big tournament, you're calling around going, I need help.
yeah, definitely not. When you're doing your forecasting and budgeting, after that, you want to look into kind of more defining of the roles of these seasonal workers. So you have your staff that's with you all year, and these seasonal workers are going to fill gaps in what the staff can accomplish. And so you need to really define every role as best as possible. So, you know, outline up their job duties and descriptions, what tasks they're going to be delegated from kind of your everyday workers. And then you need to prep all your regular staff. So you need to let them know what duties are going to be taken over by the seasonal staff. You need to make sure your managers are ready to train and get everybody up to speed. And so this all happens the 90 to 60 day mark in our planning and preparation phase. After that, in that 60 to 30 day mark, comes the recruitment and selection phase. And this is usually done a lot faster. This is usually done a lot faster than a typical hiring scenario. So when you're typically hiring, we like to say hire slowly, you know, really feel people out, really make sure they're a good fit for your organization. In this one, we're just kind of trying to find bodies sometimes. So if you can find competent people that you think aren't going to burn the place down, that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, I see it says contact high schools, community college, senior centers. That seems like a reasonable thing, too, because mm-hmm. those seems also like the people who would be willing to work, you know, and able to work in just, you know, part-time, seasonal types of situations, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, high schoolers are always great, especially summer jobs and stuff like that. But also, you know, during the holidays, they have time off or extra free time that they can help you out. But looking for those part-time workers is kind of easier now too with the gig economy and people working, you know, little contract jobs and then moving on. So how can you do it? The first thing to kind of find good recruits is diversify your sourcing. You want to try to, obviously, referrals are always the best way to hire. Ask your current staff or people that you work with if they know anybody who's looking for a short-term gig. You can partner with high schools, community colleges, or even senior centers, like you just said, to try to get temporary help in. And then obviously just your signage, you know, put out a help wanted sign. I don't feel like I see enough of those anymore. It's all online hiring. There's not enough just, hey, we need workers.
True. You know, you really don't see a lot of them around anymore.
Mm-mm.
You know,
that used to be kind of the thing. You'd have a help wanted sign or there'd be like something in the newspaper, but now it's all online. And even if you go into a store trying to get a job, they just tell you to apply online.
Yeah. Which is I don't like that. You know, when you go in, I always feel like if you take the time to go in and talk to somebody about getting a job, mm-hmm. you know, if it's at all possible, somebody's there to talk to you, then that's a perfect time to start to get a basic feel for the person.
It really is just an impromptu interview. So we've had that happen a few times when I've tried to recruit some people. They've come in with their resume, and it's always been kind of nice. So in this phase too, you also want to really streamline the application process. So, you know, get a resume and when you're doing the interviews, knock them out as fast as you can. So for a seasonal deal, you might do 2 full days of just interviews back to back to back, trying to get as many people in. You can also do group interviews. I have never done a group interview, but it could be something to try. I don't know. Maybe I have to try that for Rhino Backyards next season, a group interview.
I just saw a meme this morning as we were preparing for this episode, and it was like construction job tryouts.
Oh, yeah.
What they called auditions. They called it auditions, right?
Come work for a day.
They had no. They had questions, you know, like what's wrong with these work boots? Right.
And oh, okay.
And one guy goes, oh, those are too clean. Does your mom shine your shoes? And the guy goes, you're right, you're hired.
Yeah.
Okay. Stuff like that.
The most important part of this phase, though, is you want to extend quick offers, usually within 24 hours of the interview. People that want this kind of work are taking what they can get. And so if you find a good candidate, offer it to them in the room if you can. You want to try to hire those people up quick because they will get snatched up the next day.
Now, I seem to remember, you know, and please correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I seem to remember that there are like groups of crews that go around for this sort of stuff, you know, like a whole group of people knows how Target works or they know how Amazon or something. They'll just go apply as a group and say, we're here, you know, and then the companies come to depend on them year after year.
That is a thing that can be done. I think a lot of those are on Facebook and different groups that you can kind of join and get the training that you need to be a seasonal worker. There's also, as a business owner, if you're struggling to find candidates, there's a lot of temp agencies or employment agencies that you can reach out to help you with this recruitment process. It does cost a little. You have to pay them to help you, but it makes the process very smooth and easy.
Yeah, I would think that would be very helpful because they always have a pool of people that mm-hmm. are just ready to go to work, right?
Yep, and they all need jobs right away. So this is especially good if for like your pool tournament that you just happen to have, you know, right away and you didn't do all of this planning process. If you just need bodies quick, those are great resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
So phase three, the kind of 30 to one day mark before your busy season starts is the onboarding and training. You need to bring these people on earlier so that you can get them trained. You don't want to bring them in literally 2 days before the big rush happens and they have no idea what's going on.
And this is something that you pay for.
Yeah, you're going to have to pay them, you know, so you want to have them employed a few weeks ahead of time. It should be worked into your budget to have them work in a couple weeks before the busy season. So you should be able to make
A shopper, you know, if I come across a clueless employee, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of times I'm already stressed out in Christmas trying to, I hate crowds. I hate going in, especially when it's super busy. And if I'm trying to get help and the person who's, you know, if I can even get a hold of someone, if they're clueless, I pretty much turn around and walk out.
Yeah.
So training here would be very important.
Right. So your initial orientation, kind of your mandatory orientation, should cover just the essentials of operations, the basics, company mission, culture, dress codes, safety protocols, time clocks and scheduling, how you get all that done. And then you want to prioritize the essential training. And so you want to try to avoid overwhelming new hires with non-critical information and try to focus 20% of the knowledge that they need to do 80% of the tasks. So what that means is try to focus just the basics of what they need to accomplish most of what they need to do. And I think you'll find that when you're training for any job, that really I use about 20% of my brain and knowledge for most of what I do every day. And the other 80% is only for a small portion of, you know, things I do unusually.
The number one phrase that I like to hear from someone other than, sure, let me take care of that for you,
mm-hmm.
is, I don't know, let me go find someone who can help you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they basically take me by the hand and turn me over to someone. So they don't have to know everything.
Right.
You know, but they have to be willing and able to take me to someone who can help.
Right. And that's what our next suggestion is all about, which is the buddy system. So yep. you want to pair new seasonal hires with your designated kind of buddies. And those people are the employees that are with you all year that really know everything, especially in the first, you know, few shifts. It minimizes questions to the managers. And when you have that situation where he goes, I don't know, I have to find out, they know exactly who to go ask and who to take them to.
I think they should have name tags that say Jamie's buddy on it.
There you go. There you go. That would work out well. And then, of course, during this onboarding time, you don't want to forget the documentation phase. I can't tell you how many times clients have come to me and they've hired somebody to do temp work and they forgot to get like the W-4 and the I-9 and copies of their social card. It creates a real hassle. So make sure you have good standard operating procedures for onboarding seasonal workers, just like you do regular employees. You don't want to miss out on that, you know, documentation. You'll get penalized. And then phase four is kind of after your busy season. It's the post season. So during the season, you want to make sure that you have flexible scheduling. You want to have those kind of daily meetings, just quick check-ins with those seasonal employees, make sure they're doing everything, provide feedback for them. And then at the end of the season, you need to do the offboarding. So it should be no surprise to these employees that their term at your business is short, you know, it's a short tenure for the season. So you want to make sure that that final check, paycheck, that equipment retrieval is all set up in your standard operating procedures and that you have a good system in place for that. And if they were a very high level performer, you know, stay in touch or even keep them on if you can. And then finally, kind of some post-tenure review, schedule a meeting, ask some questions, you know, with your team. What were the biggest kind of bottlenecks in our staffing? Which training do we need to be more effective? And how many of these kind of seasonal people do we want to keep in mind for future jobs? And that's how you check in with kind of the buddies that were helping people out and the management team. To make sure that next year you're even more efficient when you have to hire those.
Yeah, I was going to say that seems like it could be a pretty good incentive to let people know, hey, you know, this is also kind of a trial period for a permanent job, you know, mm-hmm. if we have permanent positions available.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think too it's not a bad way to find people, you know,
right.
Like I think a lot of businesses do keep on high performing seasonal workers. So if you are a seasonal worker, you know, work a little extra hard, you might have a full-time job on your hand.
Well, the you know, something that came about, you know, through all the government DOGE cuts and all that stuff and everything was I saw a post about someone who wanted to be in the Forestry Service,
mm-hmm.
and apparently those are very highly sought after jobs, and they require actually a lot of expertise, and these people, they go to college, they get degrees, you know, sometimes advanced level degrees, to be able to go out and work in the field, like literally go do research in the national forests, and preservation and, you know, biodiversity stuff and all this. But the thing is that most of them have to essentially take on seasonal jobs
mm-hmm.
for many years with the Forestry Service before they can even be considered for permanent jobs.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's literally an apprenticeship.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Well, that's sort of our four-phase method for handling or managing kind of the seasonal help. So, you know, the preparation phase, recruitment phase, onboarding phase, and then sort of that postseason offboarding phase. Any final thoughts on seasonal help? We're going to have to start doing all of this here in about 3 months for our company, Rhino.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I personally don't really have that in my business, so I don't have to deal with it very often. So my thoughts are, I'm just going to follow your lead when it comes to Rhino, because that's a trip for me that we have so much business over the summer months, you know, and we definitely got to get a good crew together.
Yep.
Before that, and then they're gone after the summer, you know.
I mean, it's how it goes from March to about September. We have three crews running, you know, five man crews on each one, and now during the winter we have three employees. So wow. We lose 12 about every year, and I think next year we might have four crews, which will be 20 people. But we have to keep kind of our crew leads on, and keep them working through the winter doing little jobs. But yeah, it's a trip to hire that many people that fast. You got to get them going, and you got to get them working, and they have to be trained.
Well, that was, you know, like when the pandemic happened and everything, and then there was less oil, and then, you know, you're an oil guy. So what I was reading was some of the stuff was that's why it was hard to ramp back up, you know, because they had to bring so many people back into the oil fields, and they had to bring equipment back. And
yeah, that's a tough one. It's not quite so much seasonal, but it is. It's a layoff. It happens in Wichita, or when I was growing up, a bunch where a bunch of the aerospace, you know, industry is. They have lots of manufacturing plants up there. And so you'd end up every few years, they would have kind of these mass layoffs of skilled workers, which would flood the market with people who had great skills in aerospace, but they didn't translate well into other places. So a lot of these guys would just kind of sit around until the aerospace either picked back up, or if it took too long, they'd have to figure something else out, get a new skill.
I remember when I was, I think, a teenager in Oklahoma City, and we had a little bit of a oil bust.
Mm-hmm.
And the running joke was that you needed a PhD to work at Burger King.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody was looking for jobs during that bust. I remember that one. We were oil dropped to about $9 a barrel. We were all about bankrupt. Yeah. It was a tough year or so.
It's crazy, though, to think about how much ebb and flow there is. You know, the amount of commerce that is done seasonally in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only like retail, for example. You know, it's also the manufacturers and things like that. They've got to ramp up to be able to produce all those goods.
It is, yeah. Just almost every business is in some way, you know, kind of seasonal.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess maybe not like plumbing. You always got to have a plumber, but...
Well, there's a lot more toilets being flushed, you know, in the businesses. When,
you know, maybe so. Maybe so during the Super Bowl flush. You know,
yeah, I guess.
Everybody uses it. Yeah. Well, I think that's it for our episode, man. That's managing seasonal help.
Well, there you go, folks. So hopefully these tips help you to be prepared when your season heats up and you need to get people in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have another little recap on some of this once we go through our preparation and onboarding phase for Rhino.
That's going to be interesting. You know, the first year that I've really seen that in practice. So mm-hmm. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
All right. Take care.
This is always annoying to ask, but if you're liking this content, please like and subscribe. It's the best way for us to get more followers and more people engaged in this great business content. You can also follow us on all socials at TurtlesmithOK and find us at turtlesmith.com.